Okay, let's get started. Who am I? I'm Owen O'Malley. I was the first committer added to Hadoop back in 2006, so I've been doing this for almost 14 years now. I was the original VP of Hadoop when it became a top-level project, and I'm an Apache member as well as a committer and PMC member on Ambari, Hadoop, Hive, and Orc. And I've been a mentor for a long list of projects. Now, being a mentor is one of those things that clearly I said yes a few too many times, and points got myself in over my head and didn't do as good a job in the incubator as I should have, but I have seen a lot of projects. Okay, so getting started. The first thing that I've seen go horribly, horribly wrong is if you start on GitHub, which is really easy and a convenient way to build a community, and you don't start collecting IP agreements at the very, very beginning, because it lets you get started, that's great, you can get up and running, but when you move to Apache, now you need a code grant from each of the contributors' companies. That sucks. And it is much, much easier if you start ahead of time and get those agreements in writing up front. In particular, when Hortonworks and Vertica were working together on a C++ Orc reader, everyone agreed this should go into Apache, right? Everyone was like, yes, that's great. But when we actually went to do it, the lawyers literally took 4 months to get the agreement signed. The Hortonworks lawyers were fine because they're like, oh yeah, of course we're contributing this to Apache. But the Vertica guys, the engineers were like, yes, yes, this is what we want, but the lawyers just dragged their feet. So please, please do not start GitHub projects without collecting IP agreements about where you want this to go, because it just makes a complete mess and will slow down getting into Apache if you don't do this ahead of time. By the way, please ask questions. This is a really small group, so yes.
So these IP agreements, that are different from license headers.
Yes, that it's actually a separate agreement, and it's there's a code grant agreement that is about what it is. But you could actually get away with having an agreement that we're giving the IP to Apache. Pretty much anything legal would work. I'm not a lawyer, so don't hold me on that. I guess I should absolutely have said that. I am not a lawyer. This is not legal advice. I'm absolutely an engineer, but please do get agreements up front. Now, one way I've seen companies do this is by having the contributors assign the IP to the company. Right? So if, for example, Vertica had just said, we're going to give the code to Hortonworks with the intention that it goes to Apache. That would have been very more than enough. Then the Hortonworks agreement code grant would have been complete. But because they did work and then we did work and it was all munched together, it was a mess. Yes?
So some projects would say in the README and things like that, that the very fact that you do a pull request assigns the IP to this common repository. Is that good enough? Or?
By the way, that isn't the way Apache works. Apache doesn't collect the copyrights for each of the patches. That stays with each of the contributors. So the Apache license doesn't do that.
Yes, I know.
But if you, I agree that, yes, you could manage it that way, although we really should talk to the incubator to get a final ruling on what would be adequate coverage for that IP grant. Yes?
But if you contribute to an Apache license project by default, that is also licensed under Apache 2,
No, it isn't transitive. So you're right. Most of an Apache incubator wants more than just a license to it. It wants actually someone signing off, someone with legal authority for the company signing off that we give this IP to Apache to be released. And they only do it for big things, but they do like it. So I've just been burned, so I was trying to to give you a heads up so that you don't get burned. Yes? So
I understand the problem. What is the solution? How would you explain what? I mean, so, if I'm starting a new project,
so the easiest thing would be if Vertica had assigned the rights to Hortonworks with the intention of it going to Apache. That would have been the easiest path. But you need some kind of agreement about what the final destination of this is really documenting it. Yes?
For projects that you have done this for,
yes,
have you found it harder to build the initial community around this?
It definitely slows you down. I mean, that to be honest, that's one of the nice parts about going into Apache, is that this stuff all happens for you, and then the patch process just works. So yes, absolutely, companies resist giving IP to another company. They like giving it to Apache because it's a nonprofit org that can't get exploited later. So absolutely, that's one of the advantages of going straight into Apache. But if you want to get started on GitHub to build a community first, this is one of the dangers.
I've seen this with lots of projects like Ansible and Kubernetes and so on. When you create your first pull request there, you actually have to sign it first. There's,
yes,
a bot. There's a bot checking whether you have signed the ICLA or IPA or whatever before you're allowed to even,
Absolutely, and those work great, actually. And I did something for Google, too, and I had to go through that process, too, and agree. The first time you do a pull request, it basically makes you sign the equivalent of an ICLA, and that will work, right? Because at that point, Apache has enough to say, yes, you have permission to bring this in.
Oh. No, offline.
Wow, I'm glad you guys are like asking questions. This is great. The next one is keeping your project secret. Open source, especially in the big data space, is a huge, vibrant ecosystem. There are lots and lots of new projects. Part of why I like coming to conferences is to learn about new projects and what they're doing. If there are holes in the ecosystem, new projects come in and fill it. It creates lots of choices for users. But that means that people need to learn about your project. So you're competing with a lot of other ones. One of the questions I get all the time is, why does Apache allow multiple file formats and multiple RPC servers and serialization libraries? It's because they're not picking winners. They're allowing communities to work together to build projects. And they aren't insisting on what that code is. They're allowing the communities that want to work together work together. So that's great, but it means that to do that, you need to advertise your project. You need to get out and give talks. You need to build a good website. I just went to the Shark Tank for Podlings yesterday, and oh no, that was Tuesday. And it was great. I was very interested in like the data sketches from Yahoo. And I went to their website, and it basically consisted of a link back to their old website. And now they've got two websites, both of which are kind of incomplete. It made it really hard to figure out what I was supposed to be reading and where I was supposed to get it from. So if you can take down the old website, that's great, but spend effort and get your website up and running. It helps a lot for people to come in. The more time you spend on your website, the less time you have to answer user questions about how to get started, how to build this thing. Make getting talks out is really awesome. Write blogs, right? If you can get users to come in and write blogs about the use cases, that's awesome, right? If they can come in and say, oh, you know, Netflix is using Iceberg to manage tables that are 25 petabytes in size, that's really cool. And that gives the users a lot of confidence that, hey, this is really important. The other thing when you write blogs is get a variety of companies, right? People like seeing there are lots of different companies using the software. And so that really helps build confidence too. And what you're fighting for in this ecosystem is attention, right? You want people to spend time learning your project, to understand what your project does, how to use it. And so when you are in this ecosystem, you want to try to get as much attention as you can in a positive way. You don't want people to say, oh, that project's crap, or has a bad website. You want them to work forward and say, okay, I really think this is exciting. I think it's solving problems that I have already. And so make sure your website helps address that, right? What problem are you trying to solve? How do I use this? Those are the important problems. Questions here? No, make sure. I will post these slides. Okay, building diversity, not fostering diversity. And here I'm talking about a very specific kind of diversity. I'm talking about diversity of employers. And Apache is absolutely of two minds when it comes to this. They really are split-brained on this one. In a lot of ways, they don't care who your employer is, right? They say, the karma goes with the person, not the company, and that's great. But the projects need to encourage a diverse set of employers. That actually has a lot of reasons behind it. But the most important one is it avoids groupthink. Right? If a lot of people are all working at the same place, then they tend to think in similar ways, be using the tool in similar ways, and so they come up with similar solutions to the problem. And that leads to a lot of problems. And you will make your external users less happy if they can't get their solutions worked in. Now, oh, forget the hats thing. How am I supposed to give an Apache community talk and not talk about hats? When you're in the project, you need to keep your hats separate. You need to keep your project hat on when you're voting for your project. You have to vote for the good of the project. When you're at your company, you can keep your company hat on and do what's responsible for that. But when you're voting on the project, you shouldn't be taking your company's concerns and making them project concerns. One I see all the time is that people assume that everyone who is driving the project works at my company. That's a really, really bad assumption and really toxic to open source projects. Innovation happens everywhere. You absolutely need to take contributions from everywhere. And it's so easy to fall into the trap, especially when you've got a lot of people from the same community or same company in your community. It's really easy to fall into the trap of, oh, all the important work is happening here. We can ignore those other guys because they're doing stuff that doesn't matter. We get a lot of complaints about this in Hadoop. People are like, oh, if you're not at Cloudera or Hortonworks or Microsoft or LinkedIn, you can't get your patches committed. That's a hard place to be. You don't want that to happen. You want to make sure that you accept patches from everywhere. The other one is separating the goals from the company goals from the project goals. That's back to the hats. And in particular, I've seen a lot of cases where someone proposes a patch that competes with the company's proprietary products. And they get shut down. Why is it shut down? Oh, that's out of scope for the project. That's a really hard call to make. So my recommendation, if you're in this situation, the people that have the proprietary product should just abstain from voting. Right, let the other people in the community make the decision and just abstain from voting. The other one that's a little different is if the company has a proprietary backend that implements an interface, they often don't want people to change that interface because it'll make a lot of work for them on the back end, on the proprietary backend. And so I've seen people shoot down changes to the source code of the open source project because they didn't want breakage on the back end. That again is a very, very toxic behavior for your project. The final one that happens is your company absolutely should not be making promises about what will come be in an upcoming Apache release. My favorite one was when someone was at an Apache con and their CEO stood up on stage at a keynote and said, well, if you want to see the new version of the Project Foo 3.0, join our beta program at FooBar. That did not go over well. That was poorly received. And so don't make promises about what's in the release until it actually is released at Apache. Yes?
So we have a wiki page in Apache, which lists out all the features.
So Apache can do it. Okay. It's the company that can't do it. So absolutely, the project can have a list of things that the project would like to have in it. Although, again, personally, I tend to favor time-based releases rather than feature-based releases, although you end up doing a mix of both. So, yes, Apache project can do it. Company should not do it, right? If Hortonworks or Cloudera did it for Hadoop, that was a bad thing and should not be done. Okay. So, at Hortonworks, we hired an employee and we were importing a new project into Incubator. They had a little group of people working on it. They were like, oh, we're going to hold a developer meeting in Atlanta and everyone's flying in and we're going to decide what the roadmap is. I was like, no, because they wanted to make this into an Apache project and they were holding in-face meetings, they were holding the roadmap meeting without inviting the community, and that's really toxic, right? Because now the community can't participate. Even if they did a video meeting and made it available to everyone, that's still hard for people in different time zones, right? If someone's in Australia, it's hard for them to call in to a video call that's based in the US. Or if they're in Europe, right? Either way, it becomes a problem. And so you really need to be cautious of this. Now, that's not to say you can't hold meetings where you discuss features. Those are going to happen, of course. But you need to invite everybody in the community, and you need to just bring the discussion back to the list. So you don't bring back, okay, this is what we're going to do. You bring back, here are the discussions that different people made, and we're thinking about going this way. One way to make that better, see, you notice what I just did? We think this is what to do. You really, really, when you're writing those emails, actually in general, you want to use I instead of we. You're speaking for yourself. You're not speaking for a group. And so it helps you get in the right frame of mind if you say, I think we should do X, rather than we think we should do X. And that guideline, actually, someone gave it to me really early in my Apache career, and it's been a really good one because it helps both with the company thing as well as this kind of face-to-face meeting and makes it a lot clearer what you're doing. And, of course, making your project website makes it really, really helpful. Actually, I was looking at one of the projects that I am on the PMC but not active in and haven't been for years. I looked at their board report the other day and they resolved a couple hundred JIRAs over the quarter. Their dev list, okay, want to guess how many messages on their dev list in the quarter? How many digits do you think it had? It had one digit. They had sent one message the entire quarter. First of all, that means they didn't make any releases. Because you can't make a release at Apache with less than four messages, right? You need three plus ones and a message saying the release is done. But it also means that they weren't discussing any roadmap things on the dev list. So I actually asked them for clarification of, hey, you should explain why there's no dev traffic. And they ignored me. So I let it drop. But I should probably get back to them and say, that's not cool. You need to be doing things on the dev list, and if you've got a really low dev list traffic, yes.
So was their conversation in like the ASF JIRA system instead, or
A lot of it was on Jira, but Jira is not a super awesome place to do roadmap discussions. Okay, sure. So there were really what was going on was it was Mbari and Cloudera was, well, Hortonworks was having the discussions offline is really what was going on. So yes, there were a lot of discussions on Jira, but still not a healthy place for the community to be. Any other questions? See, here I'm airing all the dirty laundry. Okay, now when you're an incubator, you absolutely do not want to include binary release artifacts. The fundamental reason is that they're hard to make and hard to get right, and they're hard to review. And so just like in judo, you don't want to give your opponent something to hold on to throw you. Making a binary release artifact and including it as part of the release vote gives people something to complain about that's really easy to screw up. Just don't do it. Make a binary release, if you need one, after the release vote. Don't do it before the release vote. If you do it, if you make a source release, then you're good to go, and you've given them less.
Suppose I made a source release, and yes. I also want to produce the convenience mileage. Do I need to run another set of vote because it needs to go into Apache website?
No, you don't.
Okay. So any committer can just upload it?
Yes, you can. I mean, it has to be a committer, but yes. I still, actually, while you're an incubator, I wouldn't make binary releases. Work downstream somewhere to make the binary releases. Don't do it at Apache. Apache really isn't set up. I mean, because you'd want to put it into the dist framework, and it's not set up to deal with that very well. So push it to Maven Central, because not having, if it's Java, pushing it to Maven Central is kind of required to get people to use it. But I wouldn't do binary releases in dist if I were you.
Make a suggestion. If you have a Java project, it's really easy to stage your source tarball in Maven staging in Apache staging repositories, along with all your like jars, and then you vote on the tarball that you put in the mirrors, and everything else you just say, well, I'm going to release it from staging after we've passed the vote.
Yeah, but just in this not.
Well, you but. Okay, I'd be a little cautious of just using Maven Central because you need the GPG signed and you need the, actually, which Maven Central will do, as well as the checksums, the SHA-256. So you're right, Maven Central will do it. I'll grant you that.
No, but incubation says there is a specific path which we recommend. You have to put it there in Apache, this. And recently we got a IPMC reviewer said, okay, you put it into your committer people path and not into this project path. So, I mean, if you look at the new...
Yeah, no.
That advice, too.
Yeah, it's not even advice now.
It's a misunderstanding. It's a misunderstanding. There's no hard requirement for where you do your staging for the vote.
For the vote, it's open. It needs, when you're done, the source tarball needs to end up in dist. That is actually a requirement.
Yes.
You can't just have it in Maven Central. So while you're holding the vote, you could either do it in staging or you could do it in your public or your personal repository. Once it's actually a release, then it has to be in dist.
Yes.
I tend to put it in Maven. You want it in Maven Central also. But
as long as you can verify the signatures, it doesn't actually matter where you download it from.
Exactly.
That is logical, but you know, when you vote, somebody will say, oh, put it there, otherwise
But yeah, actually, making things downstream is actually even better. Not making. Okay, so those were the things that I worry about when the project is getting started. As it's running, one of the ones we've had a lot of back and forth with different, especially big projects, is the projects that hold the bar really high to make committer and PMC members. I've seen projects that take 200 patches or more to make a committer. 200 patches is a lot of work. And it's much, much worse if that project has a large patch queue that doesn't get adequate attention. And that makes it almost impossible if you don't know or work with a committer. So if you work with a committer, then you can get them to review and commit your patches. If you don't, it's really, really hard. And so I really dislike those kind of guidelines that say, oh, you should have so many patches before you're a committer. As an example, Hadoop has 3.6 thousand uncommitted patches that have been uploaded to JIRAs. That's a lot of JIRAs with uncommitted patches. I'm not exactly sure what we can do about it, because it's not much fun reviewing that, especially a patch queue that's gotten that out of control. At various points at Hortonworks, we would spend a lot of effort to make people review the patch queue, but that's about what it takes. It about takes management at one or more of the companies saying, you guys need to get that patch queue under control and keep it safe. For small projects, it's much easier, right? For Orc, the patch queue is typically under 10. So that's a really good thing. For large projects, that gets very, very out of control and can really slow you down. Now, one of the things that is less obvious, if it's hard to make a new committer, you have a committer shortage. What happens when you have a committer shortage? You have a lack of people to review patches. This makes your committer shortage worse. So you end up with a very vicious cycle of it feeding back on itself. So especially when you have a young project, be pretty aggressive about making committers. What I think is most important is technical taste, which granted is a soft analysis, and if they know their own limits. Right? Some people have a really good sense of what they know and what they don't know. Other people are a little cavalier about, oh, this seems to work. Those can be a little dangerous. But these are much more important than having a broad knowledge of the project. And so I'd recommend keeping those kind of things in mind. Now, if you want to become a committer, make patches that go in smoothly with a minimum of fuss and review, right? Because that's what they're looking for. If your patches go in smoothly, then that's a good thing. If they take lots of cycles of people telling you, oh, you forgot to fix this or address that, that's more problematic. So keeping being careful with your patches counts for a lot, and definitely counts more than making lots and lots of little patches. Yes?
There's lots of bike shedding going on with that. Like, your first patch is like a three-line patch, and then you get like 14 different comments on your Violite code style, and then someone from a big company drops like a 40-megabyte patch of some new thing with 14 bajillion new code style violation, and we'll fix it later. That's a good point.
And
I don't know how to improve on it, but that's something I see.
Again, I think it partially is education of the people doing the reviews of, yes, code styles are important, but either make them mandatory where the tool is checking it or be very soft on it, right? If I'm reviewing a patch, I'll comment occasionally saying, hey, kind of like this other style, but don't reject a patch for it, because I agree, it's really easy to end up with 40 people dogpiling on this three-line patch. On the other hand, if you automate it so that it fails the build when they violate it, that works. Or you could use Yetis to review it automatically, right? Because then you're being consistent, making it work for everyone. So if you're going to do style checks as part of your review, I'd recommend automating it as part of the build. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, trademarks. Trademarks are so much fun. Okay, again, I'm not a lawyer. Just to be clear. Trademarks and copyright are different. People get very confused. Trademarks are the names of things that are products. Copyrights are saying you can't copy that text to make a new copy of it. So trademarks are the names of products. So Apache Hadoop is a trademark, and actually so is Hadoop a trademark. They are both owned by Apache. They are not owned by a company. That's important. When we were at Yahoo still, before we spun out to make Hortonworks, we really were in an unfortunate place because we were working at a company that we were just producing the software, and Cloudera had a marketing department, and they were doing everything they could to do so that if you thought of Hadoop, you thought of Cloudera. That really pissed us off at Yahoo. We did not like it. But it definitely made it so that they were bending or breaking the rules on the trademarks. And it often, so you need to pay attention to them. So there's two pieces with trademarks. The first is that you don't use another trademark. When you name your project, you want to make sure to do a trademark search and make sure that you aren't infringing on someone else's trademark. For example, when we adopted Metron, it had been fired over the wall, but ignored and dropped, and the community was dead. We were like, okay, we want to move this into Apache, which Apache is okay with because the community was dead. Apache doesn't let you fork communities, so you can't take someone else's active project and move it into incubator. But if a community is dead, then you can actually move that Apache code into incubator. But we didn't want to violate the trademark, so we made them change the name to become a new name, because the trademark had to go to Apache, and the old trademark was owned by the company that had thrown it over the wall. You want to make those changes early, because all the advertising you've done for your project by giving talks goes away very effectively when you change the name. So do it as early as you figure out there's a problem. So as soon as you're coming into Apache, I would look. Yes?
How do you think this applies to Maven coordinates?
Okay, so for Maven coordinates, it's less of an issue because no one else should be making things in org Apache. So as long as you're not hitting another Apache project. Now, there have been issues there, too. Well, like, don't get me started about when Spark was publishing Hive components.
The reason why I ask is because Cloudera's shipment of ZooKeeper often flags in GitHub's as a dependency with GitHub's CVE.
Yeah, I've tried to get our release engineers to not do that. We probably need to have another discussion with, because you're right. Cloudera shouldn't be making releases and releasing under org Apache. I agree, which is what's happening now. And good point. Wow, you really are keeping me honest. Yes.
So does that also mean I already have a code base internally and it's called my company?
Yes.
Do I need to change this to org Apache?
Yes, you absolutely do.
As well as for the Java packages.
Yes. You don't have to necessarily do it immediately, but I would strongly recommend doing it precisely because you don't want to accidentally conflict with something else at your company. You also want to make sure that people know that that's an Apache trademark, not your company trademark.
Not the Java packages. Don't change those. That's API that you want to be compatible with. But the Maven coordinates.
The Maven coordinates are easy to change.
I'd even say change the package names.
Yeah, I'm actually. You often. Okay. Let me. So what I'd propose for the package names is that you leave the old ones and include a basically as a shim layer to the ones at the new API. So you can leave the old com.foo APIs for a release or two and then drop them. Some projects have left them around for a very long time. That's kind of unfortunate, and I agree with Alan that it's much, much better to get your APIs over to org Apache. But it does create breakage, and I totally get that you need to not screw your community.
Could I make that change even before becoming an incubation project?
I would recommend against that because, okay, so I screwed that one up. Not moving from a company one, but when we forked or moved Orc out of Hive, I started using Org Apache Orc when it was still in Hive. That actually created a mess when Hive was making releases with Orc artifacts, and I would have been far better off to wait until I was at Apache at the product to use the Org Apache namespace. So I had to work around it, so I would recommend against it, because you'll end up regretting it, I suspect. The other piece of trademarks is making sure other people don't abuse your project's trademarks, right? So that's a downstream. That one, it is very, very hard if it's someone who isn't actually in your project. If it's a user and they're using Hadoop incorrectly, you send an email, depending on them. Occasionally you'll get, oh, sorry about that, and they fix it. More often I get, when I would do it as when I was VP of Hadoop, I'd get an email back, you're an asshole, go away. And you're like, oh, okay. And because I don't have any lawyers to send it to, it didn't go anywhere. So that never worked very well. On the other hand, if it's a company that has members on the project, then those project members are expected to fix the problem. In particular, there have been cases where the board has come in with a hammer. By the way, anytime the board gets involved in a project, it's a really bad thing. And the board has actually removed all the PMC members from a company off of a project and made them re-earn their karma because they weren't helping to address the problem of their company's use of the Apache trademarks. Okay, so this is serious stuff. You want to make sure that stuff gets fixed. The other thing we did at Hortworks that was really good was holding training classes for engineers and marketing teams.
And you take those in the Apache training project?
Actually, that is, at the end I include a link to those slides, so they're absolutely there. And we found that while Hortonworks was little, it was fine, right? When we were 25 people or 30 people, just word of mouth did really well. As we got up to over 1,000 and then 1,400 people, it didn't work so well anymore. And then we absolutely needed to hold training classes where we told engineers how to deal with Apache, what Apache was, how to deal with open source, what the expectations were. And actually giving that to the marketing team was almost equally important because the marketing team didn't know to come talk to us before they used Hadoop or Spark or whatever. And so it was really important to hold those training classes and make sure that a lot of people got access. Okay, you guys gonna give me a comment? All right, now, Hortonworks and Cloudera, this one doesn't come up as much because we're doing almost everything in open source. But for companies that are doing open source on the side, it's really, really important that the employees' goals and objectives reflect their open source contributions, right? It really, really demotivates the employees if their contributions to open source aren't counted in their performance appraisals at the end of the year. And you need to count everything, code contributions, documentation contributions. Those are so important. You end up saving so much time if you get documentation contributions. I was talking to someone today, and they were like, oh, yeah, it was actually someone on the Cassandra team or project, and they were like, oh, yeah, we keep getting these use cases about this and this and this, and people are looking at all these blogs and getting incorrect information, or they go to the DataStax website because it's got more documentation than the project. And getting that resolved means that we get fewer complaints from users who are confused, right? We get fewer problems where a person expects one set of behaviors and in fact something else is supposed to happen. And so making that get rewarded is actually super important. Both Hive and Orc actually made PNC members out of documentation people who have done documentation contributions because it's so important. Technically, they didn't need the commit bit, but I think it was super important to do that. And because it gives them recognition, right? We don't have documenter as a role, and making that official and putting them on the website as, hey, this person is important to this project, is a really good thing. Another important piece is code reviews. Like we said, those huge patch queues tend to grow without bound on the big projects. That's really unfortunate. The other, you want to make sure that includes reviewing people's patches, even if they're at other companies, right? Maybe not focus exclusively on other companies' patches, but make sure that patches are getting addressed, even regardless of which company they are. And you really want those to be measured, right? You want those contributions to be measured and say, okay, your goal is to make sure that you spend this much time reviewing patches is a really good thing and helps manage that problem. Making conference presentations part of your... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
OpenStack actually has kind of an unwritten community policy that code reviews have to be done by somebody from another company so that you're not just getting your own stuff in there.
That no doubt helps, actually. There are definitely projects where that would become more problematic, but again, it's easiest if you work with a committer, but even if you know a committer, it is easier. So the hardest case is where you don't know anyone. And making that hard really hurts your community, right? If someone's first experience it with your project is they put a pull request in and it gets ignored for 6 months, that sucks. And they'll tend to wander away rather than repeat that experiment. So yeah, definitely, that's a good suggestion. Rewarding conference presentations, right? Personally, I love going to conferences because you get to talk to people, you get to see what else is going on, but making sure that that's expected and encouraged is a good thing. And finally, you need to make the managers responsible for this stuff too. Because if you just put it on the employees, but the managers have deliverables, that means that the first thing that will slip when the schedule's behind, and come on, we're software engineers, things are always running late, is going to be the open source presentation, or contributions, right? And you want to make sure that those get rewarded up. And so we haven't done that super often, or as often as we should, but again, it's really good if it does get done. Is that a question or? Oh. Okay, here's one of the ones that got particularly painful for us. Do not develop major features off the grid. So stealth development is really, really bad because it breaks the community in really painful ways. Actually, one of the places where Hadoop went horribly, horribly off the rails is when Yahoo decided to develop Hadoop security privately. Because it both stopped the forward motion and stopped the release train. So when we started Hadoop security, we had been releasing roughly every 3 to 4 months. So 18, 19, 20, those came out pretty fast, pretty regularly. Things were chugging along. And then we started security. And so 12 months later, someone released 21. And Yahoo never deployed it. That had a couple of really bad effects, right? Because first of all, it's been a year. So some stuff went in, but no one actually tested it to make sure it was running well at scale. What happened after that was Facebook decided to fork from 0.21 and they started doing their own patches. They just went off and did their own fork. As far as I know, they still aren't running Hadoop with security. which actually, since I use Facebook, that kind of scares the bejesus out of me. LinkedIn, on the other hand, ended up forking off of 0.20 and going their own way with their own set of patches. They've come back over the years. Facebook is still forked. Another 12 months later, so 24 months after 0.20, Yahoo finally pushed out 0.20.203. And only Alan probably knows why it was 203. But as the number suggests, it did not include 21. It was not off of master. It was a branch of 0.20. And it was 24 months later and was a huge upgrade from 0.20. And that pretty much got pushed out over a weekend. With discussion in the community, but they couldn't react to it, right? It was done. Okay, thank you. And it was another 8 months before 1.0 was released, which was, in fact, included both 0.20.203 and the master. So basically, we'd really broken up the... Okay, licensing problems. Okay, I probably should have left myself more than 5 minutes to address licensing.
That includes you too, Nick.
So your projects can easily use anything with permissive license. So Apache, BSD, MIT are all great. If Eclipse, Mozilla, Creative Commons, Attribution, weak copy left, and Category X can only be used in very specific cases. So actually, CC BY shouldn't be down there, it's up above. Category X can only be used in optional build tools or system-provided ones, so you're allowed to use the JDK, but you shouldn't depend on anything that isn't that's in Category X. And that includes recursive dependencies. Recursive dependencies are awfully hard to track, so Maven dependency tree should absolutely be your friend. And these things can sneak up on you. Recently in Orc, we upgraded the air compressor dependency from 0.10 to 0.15. Someone added a call into Z standard. We previously excluded the slice dependency because it wasn't used. Well, now Z standard was using it. And slice depends on Jolt Core, and Jolt Core is DPL'd. So even though we were depending on air compressor, which was Apache licensed, which was depending on slice, which was Apache licensed, slice depended on Jolt Core, which is GPL'd. We filed an issue with air compressor. They figured out how to work around it. It was only one method, thank God, that they were actually using out of slice so they could remove the slice dependency. And that was unfortunate. Actually, copying code from Stack Overflow has a lot of the same problem because it's not a compatible license if it's CC by A. And so you can't put that stuff into an Apache project. I actually had to work with Knox recently had that problem. They had a bunch of code, or not a bunch, they had a page worth of code that they had copied from Stack Overflow. And then they realized, oh, we can't use that. And so they had to re-implement it, basically, because there was no way to work around it. So summary, build your community, give talks, make the website good, make the project easy to build. So many projects lose people if the project is a pain in the ass to build. Make the community friendly. There was a really good talk yesterday about by the Beam guys about making friendly communities that you should look up. Do your work in the open. Don't do big pushes of features all of a sudden. And train your employees in how to do Apache and open source. And there's the link to the Hortonworks slide deck. Okay, thank you. Any final questions? Yes.
Mentioned that it's a better idea to do design discussions on the dev mailing list, and video conferencing or calls don't really.
So you can do them for brainstorming, but yeah, you need to move those discussions to the list.
So what are your thoughts if a community, say they have a recurring public conference call where anybody from the globe can dial in?
But it's really hard if you're in Australia or exactly. India, and so no. I actually say you can use those as a mechanism for communication, but the primary work should be done on the dev list. And we've gotten pushback from projects for this, by the way. I mean, there have definitely been incubator projects that are like, oh, we want to use Slack and not email. That really doesn't work very well.
It's like when really hit the nail on the head. You can talk about this. I mean, that's why we have Apache Kafka, but all of the important details
have to be brought back.
Exactly. So the rationale that might lead to a decision needs to be on the list, and then the decision gets made.
Okay. Well, thank you. If you've got more questions, you can talk to me.